Our second speaker will be Glenn Schaefer, representing the Central Region. His topic will be New Problems, New Solutions. New Problems, New Solutions. The history of American agriculture is the record of an unprecedented technological and mechanical revolution. During the past few hundred years, the farmers of America have witnessed a sudden explosion of scientific knowledge, which has taught us how to solve problems that baffled farmers for over 7,000 years. Armed with this tremendous technical knowledge and mechanical power, we have astounded the world with our ability to produce. Today, we employ only 8% of our labor force in farming, and we harvest crops from only 2/3 of our readily available cropland. Yet we produce more food than we can eat at home and sell abroad. For the first time in history, we have effectively solved the problems of hunger and famine. And in doing so, we have created a new kind of agriculture, an agriculture with new problems that require new solutions in a nation no longer preoccupied with survival. We have exchanged the problems of scarcity for the problems of abundance. The most pressing problem of American agriculture is no longer the technological problem of production. Our most important problem today is a social problem, a problem to be solved not by the scientist, but by the farmer. The farm problem of today is low farm income. The figures are simple and impressive. Per capita farm income is only $1,430, compared with a per capita non-farm income of over $2,400. One half of America's farm families are in the lowest one-fifth of our nation's income scale. And the statistics are familiar, for the problem has been widely discussed. It has been documented, analyzed, investigated, exploited, and lamented. We have worried about low farm income for 30 years, and for 30 years, we have sought a solution. But in our search for a solution, we have often ignored some of the basic causes of low farm income. We have consistently sought to raise farm income by some painless and politically profitable gimmick, and we have consistently failed. If we are to raise farm income, then we must take a closer look at all the facts, the ones that are pleasant and the ones that are distasteful. We must recognize that the basic roots of low farm income lie not in a maladjustment of the market mechanism, but in the attitudes of the American farmer. In our competitive agriculture, the average farmer's income tends to be the least for which he is willing to work. And the average American farmer is willing to work for less rather than leave the farm. He is disinclined to change, tied to the soil, and untrained for other jobs. He is willing to work for a low income. He even expects to work for a low income. And he works for a low income. This inclination of farmers to work for a low return has defeated almost every government attempt to raise their incomes. Placing a low value on their labor, farmers have rewarded themselves scantily even when farm prices have been artificially maintained. They have placed a higher value on agriculture's limiting factor of production, land. They have consistently capitalized higher prices into higher priced land. During the past decade, the federal government failed, despite tremendous expenditures, to raise farm income. Yet farmers increased by 68% the prices which they were willing to pay for land. The tobacco program, which combines stringent acreage allotments with high price supports, offers another example of farmers using additional income from price supports to bid up the price of their limiting factor of production, in this case, acreage allotments. Many tobacco allotments in North Carolina, for example, now sell for as much as $5,000 to $6,000 an acre, 10 times the value of the land. Our price support programs have supported an annual increase of 8.5% in the value of farm real estate, but they have not solved American agriculture's problems of low farm income and rural poverty. The $30 billion that we have spent to support farm prices has not solved the problems of the 75% of our farmers who produce only 25% of our agricultural output. After 30 years of effort, from Henry Wallace's Evernormal Granary to Orville Freeman's Supply Management, we have failed to solve our problems of abundance. Failed because we have been treating symptoms instead of causes. If we are to solve our problems of abundance, we must attack not the symptom of low prices, but rather our basic social problems. Efficient and well-managed farms usually earn incomes very nearly equal to those of similar-sized non-farm enterprises. But efficient and well-managed hardly describes the vast majority of American farms. The average American farmer has a farm too small for efficient production or an education too meager for good management. Furthermore, the same disinclination to change which has kept many farmers on the farm has also made many farmers unwilling to adopt the new techniques and machines needed to compete in our modern agriculture. 1 million American farm families are truly poor, far too poor to be helped by price supports. Migrant farm workers, sharecroppers, and hillbillies are the not-so-extreme examples of genuine farm poverty. The plight of these producers must be alleviated, but their problems cannot be solved by raising prices. If we are to raise farm income, then we must strike at the basic roots of low farm income. We must solve the human equation. To solve our problems of scarcity, we have made a tremendous investment in science, in technology, and in agriculture's natural resources. If we are to solve our problems of abundance, we must make a tremendous investment in agriculture's human resources. The basic problem of American agriculture today is the American farmer, and that problem can be solved only by education. An educated farmer will not be willing to work for a low income, and he will not have to work for a low income, for he will be willing and able to produce efficiently on the farm or to leave it if necessary. We can raise farm income only if the next generation of farmers is an educated generation of farmers, a generation of farmers able to apply the discoveries of technology to raise their incomes, a generation of farmers able to insist by their actions as well as by their statements that they deserve higher incomes. The challenge of our problems of abundance offers us both tremendous opportunities and difficult tasks. A successful attempt to raise farm income will involve cutting the farm labor force in half and changing the attitudes and the occupations of millions of American farmers. With 5% unemployment, the farmer's disinclination to change, and his average age of over 50, we can hope for only limited progress towards the resolution of our problems of abundance by the present generation of farmers. But our real opportunity to raise farm income lies with the younger generation. Upon our shoulders, the shoulders of the future farmers of America, rests the responsibility for solving America's problems of abundance. Upon our actions today, depend the farm incomes of tomorrow. If we are to raise farm income, then 9 out of 10 farm boys must find non-farm employment. Those boys who leave the farm must receive an education which will enable them to compete in the modern labor market. And those who remain must receive an education which will enable them to compete in agriculture and to insist upon a high return for their labor. Millions of American farmers today are tied to poverty and low incomes by their lack of education. Today, we are determining how educated the next generation of farmers will be. The official creed of the Future Farmers of America begins with the words, "I believe in the future of farming, with a faith born not of words, but of deeds." Future farmers, if the future of farming is to be bright, then we must believe in it with a faith not only born of deeds, but also shown in deeds. Ours must be a faith that the future will be better because we shall make it better. Are there any questions?
Glenn, in your speech, you have been quite critical, I think, of the inefficiency and the poor management of American farms. Therefore, how do you account for the fact that with such inefficiency and with such poor management, American agricultural production is the envy of practically every country in the world?
I hoped to point out in my speech that a good portion, perhaps a half to two-thirds of the farmers in America are what we would honestly have to call inefficient producers, either because they lack the ability to manage or they lack the education, and usually more important, they lack the capital and resources. But the fact is that there's another half of the American farm labor force, a half which is the most tremendously efficient farm labor force in the world. And that half has produced this tremendous surplus and this tremendous amount of food that we have in America today. And it is the efficiency of these farmers that has made the tremendous opportunities of American agriculture possible today. But that has not erased the fact that we have a tremendous human problem with a great percentage of those engaged in American agriculture.
Thank you. Glenn, what are some of the reasons that make the low income or the ineffective farmer reluctant to leave the farm despite the low income you referred to?
Of course, there have been a great number of reasons set forward. Certainly one of the reasons is the farmer's innate love of the soil and the fact that most farmers would rather farm than anything else that you'd like to point them to. Another reason is the fact that the average age of the American farmer is 50.5 years of age, an age at which they very seldom have any opportunity to go into any other line of work. I think a third reason for this unwillingness of farmers to leave the farm is in general the lack of opportunities of employment elsewhere in the economy. And certainly, if we hope to fully solve the American agriculture problem, we're going to have to do a lot better than we have in the past with the unemployment statistics of the economy as a whole.
Thank you.
You discussed the fact, Glenn, that we've exchanged our problems of scarcity for problems of abundance. And do you feel that in view of the fact that we have the so-called population explosion, that there could be a time again in the future when our problem might be scarcity rather than abundance as it now is?
Yes. Obviously, if we were to extend the trends of our population growth at the present time, they would unquestionably, at some period in the future, outstrip the rate of growth of our agricultural production. But we can't be too sure of ourselves when we start extending and projecting statistics. One example is that if we were to project the trends of the American labor force today, by the year 1995, 100% of the American labor force would be employed in research and development for television, which should give us some notion of the fact that we shouldn't always count on trends continuing. Furthermore, I believe that the problem with population explosion cannot seriously be put as a problem of coping with it by accommodating to it, but rather a problem of coping with the trend itself. If we were to extend the population trends of the present by the year 21,016, I believe, everyone be crushed to death because there wouldn't be any standing room left. Certainly, we want to stop it long before that. And I believe that just as the problem of an expanding crime rate does not lie in going out and seeing if we can manage to get the resources together to build more prisons, so the problem in expanding population growth does not lie in trying to increase agricultural production. Are there any other questions?
Glenn, I have one short one. What is the situation in your community? Do you believe 50%, 75%, what percent of the farmers are inefficient and poor managers? Do you notice any change taking place?
I think a tremendous change has taken place in my community in the past, well, I haven't seen the past 50 years, but I get the impression that there's been a tremendous change in the past 50 years. And the situation in my community, I think, is reflective of a large portion of American agriculture, because perhaps 90% of the people in my community who work and own farms actually work elsewhere. Thank you.